Good morning and welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. My name is Brian Miller and I'm your lay leader. Luther Elmore will be your worship leader today.
We as Unitarian Universalists recognize and honor those who have belonged to and been affiliated with our tradition of liberal religion. One of those who has a tenuous claim for being a Unitarian is Henry David Thoreau. By no means can he be recognized as a practicing Unitarian during his adult life. One biographer, Richard Schneider, says that as an adult, he refused to attend church. Carl Bodie, editor of The Portable Thoreau, wrote in his fine introduction that Thoreau normally went for a walk by Walden Ponds on Sundays when most of Concord, Massachusetts was in church. He even refused to pay a required church tax to support the local minister. He said that he did not want to be considered a member of the church and filed a statement in which he declared, quote, "Know all men by these presents that I, Henry Thoreau, do not wish to be considered a member of any incorporated society which I have not joined." After that, the church no longer billed him for the annual payment. More than anything else, Thoreau was a part of the intellectual and literary movement we know as Transcendentalism. In America, the chief prophet of Transcendentalism was Ralph Waldo Emerson, and Thoreau was very close to him. His religious ties were closer to Eastern philosophies than liberal Christianity. Certainly, he rejected the Trinity and believed that God is one. His portrait is included in our hallway, where we showcase 100 famous UUs, and he is described as an author, naturalist, and philosopher. However, our own UUA website, uua.org, in which his name is listed, has no biography of him posted. Nevertheless, we do consider him one of us, and he has, I think, an important message about the way to live your life. Thoreau was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, where his father had a factory for making lead pencils, which came to be recognized as the finest made in America. Yes, for some of you who might not know this, there was a time long, long ago when things were actually manufactured in this country. Young David Henry Thoreau, that was his given name, later changed the order of his name and attended public school and for some time a prestigious private academy. The younger of two sons, he showed more academic promise than his older brother John, and he was selected by the family to attend Harvard. He barely passed the entrance exams, but he did well and consistently ranked in the top half of his class, graduating in 1837 at the age of 19. In the same month that he graduated, Ralph Waldo Emerson gave his seminal address, The American Scholar, to Harvard. It is not clear whether or not Thoreau heard that message, but he certainly came to accept its propositions. Emerson encouraged the young Harvard scholars to, quote, "study nature and know thyself." He concluded, quote, "The scholar is that man who must take up into himself all the ability of the time, all the contributions of the past, all the hopes of the future. If there is one lesson more than another which should pierce his ear, it is, the world is nothing, the man is all. In yourself is the law of all nature. In yourself slumbers the whole of reason. It is for you to know all. It is for you to dare all." End quote. And dare all, Thoreau would. After graduation, career paths for Thoreau were unclear. He could go into the family pencil-making business, he could go into the ministry, or he could choose a profession such as medicine, law, or education. As luck would have it, there was a position available at the Concord Public School. He took the job and lasted all of 2 weeks. It seems that a member of the local school committee visited the school unannounced and found Thoreau's students to be too unruly. He demanded that the young teacher use corporal punishment and bring the miscreants into line. Thoreau did as he was told, taking a ruler to several of his young male students. That evening, he turned in his resignation. He then unsuccessfully applied for other teaching jobs in New England, Virginia, and Kentucky, and went back to work in his father's pencil-making factory. He and his brother John then decided they'd open a private school of their own, and they did so with some success. The school, where Henry taught science and foreign languages, has been described as successful and innovative. They ultimately grew and moved into the vacated former home of the Concord Academy. By the spring of 1841, the school was doing well, but John became ill and the school was closed. Less than a year later, John died in Henry's arms. The death of his young, beloved brother was a severe blow to Henry. Thoreau then moved back into the home of Ralph Waldo Emerson, where he served as a handyman and helped edit the Transcendentalist journal, The Dial. He published several articles and poems, although one critic has described the poetry as quite forgettable. By now, Thoreau's ties to Emerson and the Transcendentalist movement were firmly established. He had also begun to give lectures through local lyceums. Thoreau left Emerson's household after 2 years to serve as a tutor to the children of Emerson's brother who lived on Staten Island. He hated New York City. He wrote to Emerson that the city was, quote, a thousand times meaner than I could have imagined. The pigs in the street are the most respectable part of the population. By the end of the year, he's back in Concord making pencils again. Still trying to find himself at the age of 27 and desiring more time from contemplation and writing, in the spring of 1845, he took the monumental step and moved onto land owned by Emerson about a mile from Concord on Walden Pond. There he built a cabin, and on July 4th, 1845, he moved in. He would live there until September of 1847. And for that period and his writing of his experiences, we remember Thoreau. He borrowed an axe, went to Walden Pond, felled trees, hewed them on two sides into 6-inch timbers, and built his 10-foot by 15-foot cabin, a fine 150-square-foot condo on the lake. He calculated his costs at $28.12. He planted a 2.5-acre garden with potatoes, corn, peas, turnips, and beans, and more beans. He estimated he had 7 miles of rows of beans. As the garden grew, he spent most mornings barefoot, hoeing weeds. He furnished his house simply. He had a bed, table, 3 chairs, a 3-inch mirror, a pair of tongs and andirons, a kettle, a skillet, a frying pan, a washbowl, a dipper, 2 knives, 2 forks, 1 spoon, 3 plates, 1 cup, a lamp, a jug for oil, and another jug for molasses. Those were the entire contents. When he cleaned his house, he put all the furniture outside, threw water on the floor along with sand from the pond, and scrubbed the house clean. He would write, quote, it was pleasant to see my whole household effects out on the grass. They seemed glad to get out themselves. One time he acquired 3 pieces of limestone, but he explained, quote, I was terrified to find that they required dusting daily, when all the furniture of my mind was all undusted still, and I threw them out the window in disgust. I must say, I share his aversion to dusting. A lady friend offered him a mat for his floor, but deciding he had little time to clean it, he turned her down. To explain his action, he wrote, it is best to avoid the beginnings of evil. He had seen the danger in focusing a life on possessions. He looked at his neighbors and saw many with debts as he struggled to pay off their homes, farms, and lands. He deduced that many times, instead of a man owning a farm, the farm owned him. He refused to fall into that trap. With his simple cabin by the lake, he studied and observed nature. He went for long walks in the surrounding woods and spent time at the pond. He joyously decided, quote, I found myself suddenly neighbor to the birds, not by having imprisoned one, but having caged myself near them. One day he was hoeing in the garden. A sparrow lit on his shoulder. One day while paddling around the pond, he encountered a loon. As Thoreau paddled toward the bird, the loon let out what Thoreau called a wild laugh and dove under the water only to emerge closer to Thoreau. As Thoreau approached the loon, the bird dove once again and Thoreau paddled in that direction. When the loon reappeared, he let out a laugh once again and dove again. For over an hour, this game of hide and seek between Thoreau and the bird continued until it began to rain and the game ended. On another occasion, he witnessed a fierce battle between red and black ants. standing for an eternal amount of time, staring at these ants battling each other. Some ants were in mortal combat, and dead bodies were strewn about. Thoreau wrote, quote, "It was the only battle which I have ever witnessed, the only battlefield I have ever trod while the battle was raging. Enter Nicene War. The Red Republicans on the one hand and the Black Imperialists on the other. On every side they were engaged in deadly combat, and human soldiers never fought so resolutely. I should not have wondered by this time to find that they had their respective bands stationed on some eminent chip and playing their national air the while to excite the slow and cheer the dying combatants. I was myself excited somewhat as if they had been men. The more you think of it, the less the difference. I have never learned which party was victorious, nor the cause of the war, but I felt as I had had my feelings excited and harrowed by witnessing the struggle, the ferocity and carnage of human battle before my door." He became so familiar with the squirrels that they sometimes ran across his shoes as he stood outside as if he were not there. Mice came around when he ate to nibble on the crumbs that fell. One nibbled cheese from his fingers. Wasps made their nest in the cabin, and he did little to dislodge them. Some days after morning bath, he would sit in his doorway until noon, staring out at the trees and undisturbed solitude and stillness. He would comment, "We could never have enough of nature." While living in this cabin, he and a friend took a trip to explore the woods in Maine. The trip would become the basis for one of Thoreau's books, aptly named The Maine Woods, in which he would describe his adventures and the wildlife and foliage he saw. In one of the passages from that book, written in the 1840s, he suggested the establishing of national forests and national preserves. He said, quote, "Why should not we have our national preserves, in which the bear and panther may still exist and not be civilized off the face of the earth, our forests for inspiration and our own true recreation? Or shall we, like villains, grub them all up, poaching on our own national domains?" This was over 30 years before our first national park, Yellowstone, would be established. And now, over 150 years after he saw the value in preserving wilderness, and today, sadly, in my opinion, some politicians and business leaders still do not see the great treasures we possess, in spite of Ken Burns' fine documentary on national parks, maybe those leaders merely were not watching PBS. Walden Pond was not a pond as we commonly define it, but rather it was a small lake. Thoreau estimated that it covered about 60 acres and it was over 100 feet deep. During the winter of 1846-1847, a commercial ice operation arrived at Walden Pond. About 100 men descended on the pond that winter with saws and plows and sleds and chains. They cut huge blocks of ice for 16 days. It is estimated in those 16 days they cut and removed 10,000 tons of ice. The blocks were stacked 35 foot high. Hay was layered between the blocks, and the huge stack of ice did not melt for over a year. Much of it was shipped out of Concord by rail. And Thoreau fantasized that the sweltering inhabitants of Charleston, New Orleans, Bombay, and Calcutta might have drunk from his well, Walden Pond. Thoreau's concept of simplicity extended to his attitude about travel. A friend suggested that they take a train trip. Thoreau said that the fastest way to travel was by foot. The way he calculated it, if he and his friend were to start on a 30-mile trip at the same time, the friend would have to work for an entire day to earn the price of a train ticket. In the meantime, Thoreau would begin walking, enjoying nature as proceeded, and thus arrive sooner than his friends. He concluded that if the railroad tracks stretched around the globe, he could stay ahead of his friend as he saw the world and his friend labored to pay his way. In spite of this life of solitude, he did not live the life of a hermit. During the time he was at Walden, he took odd jobs working as a carpenter, surveyor, and laborer. Every day or two, he walked into town. Friends and visitors dropped by to see him. At one time, about 30 people crowded into his small cabin. According to one writer, his cabin became a fashionable place for group picnics and meetings of civic leaders. He also did not withdraw from the world. He kept up with the news and the local gossip. For several years, he had not paid a head tax, sometimes referred to as a poll tax, which was imposed on every male 21 years of age and older. He said that his refusal to pay this tax was in protest because, quote, I did not pay a tax to or recognize the authority of the state which buys and sells men, women, and children like cattle. He refused to support such a government for its stance on slavery. So one day when he went into Concord to pick up a shoe from the cobbler, the local tax collector saw him and asked him for the money that was owed. When Thoreau refused, they calmly walked to the local jail, and Thoreau was locked up with a man accused of burning down a barn. Ralph Waldo Emerson visited him there and asked, "What are you doing in there?" To which Thoreau responded, "What are you doing out there?" That evening, an anonymous donor, probably an aunt, paid his taxes, and he was released from jail the next morning. On September the 6th, 1847, after living at Walden Pond for 2 years and 2 months, Thoreau left. Emerson was going on a lecture tour of Europe, and Thoreau moved back into the Emerson household. He would write, quote, I learned this, at least by my experiment, that if one advocates or advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. He will put some things behind, will pass an invisible boundary. New, universal, and more liberal laws will begin to establish themselves around and within him. Or the old laws will be expanded and interpreted in his favor in a more liberal sense. And he will live with a license of a higher order of beings. In proportions as he simplifies his life, the laws of the universe will appear less complex. And solitude will not be solitude, nor poverty, poverty, nor weakness, weakness. If you have built castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put the foundations under them. Thoreau struggled the next few years, lecturing and writing. In 1849, he published a week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, which received mildly favorable reviews. After 4 years, however, only about 300 of the first 1,000 volumes had been sold. Thoreau would then experience a plight of many authors when the publisher demanded that he take possession of the remaining copies. He would famously write, quote, I now have a library of nearly 900 volumes, over 700 of which I wrote myself. 7 years after leaving his cabin in the woods, Thoreau published Walden. It sold well, and finally he had a measure of success. However, he would live only 8 more years. Dying in May of 1862, he was 44 years old. In the days before he died, an aunt visited him and asked him if he had made his peace with God. Even in his weakened state, he replied with his usual humor and sarcasm, saying, I did not know that we had ever quarreled. So what do we learn from Henry David Thoreau, this iconic figure in UU history? On one hand, I believe he encourages us each to live our own life, to make our own decisions and not be swayed by public opinion or the wishes of others. He showed this strength of independence throughout his life. Some weeks ago, someone forwarded to me, and I do not remember who it was, one of those internet postings regarding the things people allegedly regret while on their deathbed. Now, I cannot evaluate the veracity of that list, but at the top of regrets dying people had was this. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And what might be the most famous and often quoted passage from Walden, and some of you might have had this on a poster in your college dorm room, Thoreau said, Why should we be in such desperate haste to succeed and in such desperate enterprises? If a man does not keep pace with his companions, perhaps it is because he hears a different drummer. Let him step to the music which he hears, however measured or far away. One of our 7 principles is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Certainly, Thoreau would have supported that principle as he recognized that all should march to the beat of his or her own drummer. A couple of years ago, when I was responsible for keeping the membership records for this church, an 80-something-year-old woman submitted her resignation. In her resignation letter, she stated that she no longer wanted to be considered a member of this church because, as she said, "I want to die a Quaker." She was 80-something years old. Although we lost a member, I applaud her tenacity and her willingness to march to the beat of her own drummer. Thoreau also encourages us to spend time in nature and enjoy the world about us. Not that we all must abandon civilization and move into a cabin in the woods, but rather that we should experience the smell, sights, and sound of all about us. A couple of months ago, Elizabeth gave me a book, Cast Off the Darkness. It is the autobiography of Peter Putnam, a privileged young man from a wealthy family. While at Princeton, disconsolate and lost, he attempted to commit suicide. He did not succeed, but the gunshot wound to his head permanently blinded him. He wrote of that experience, quote, "Half dead, I was more alive than I had ever been. Perhaps I was fully alive for the first time." Visually impaired, Peter Putnam now woke to all other avenues and went on to live a life full, and as he believed, a life that might not have been possible without that self-inflicted disability. And yes, he was a UU. Indeed, stop and smell the roses, and everything else as well. Thoreau tells us to live as simply as possible. That is where value lies. There is no need to go chasing the latest gadgets and entertainments. These are ephemeral and fleeting. He derided the latest inventions of his age, explaining, quote, "Our inventions are wont to be pretty toys, which distract our attention from serious things. They are but improved means to an unimproved end." Keep in mind the improved ends you seek, not just the toys that amuse. Ralph Waldo Emerson delivered the eulogy at Thoreau's funeral and said of him, "He chose to be rich by making his wants few." Thoreau also tells us to enjoy our work. For 5 years, he supported himself by minimal labor. He calculated in that time that he had averaged on the average about 6 weeks of work a year. Thus, he had the remainder of his time for study, writing, and the observance of nature. He saw his brief tenure as a teacher as a failure because he had merely sought to support himself and not help others. He imagined that he might be able to earn a living outdoors by picking wild huckleberries and selling them to others. He considered going into business, but figured that it might take him 10 years to get a good business well established. This thought filled him with fear, because he calculated that after 10 years, it might be so successful that he would have, quote, a good business, and he would find it hard to give it up. What was the point in earning excess money? It only bought excess things. He would write, quote, "There is no more fatal blunderer than he who consumes the greater part of his life getting his living." Thoreau would give a rather clear explanation for his experiment in living at Walton and a statement about living a life of simplicity. He said, quote, part of the portion we read this morning that Brian led us in reading, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived." For Thoreau, living a simple life and being as close to nature as possible helped him achieve that. To live deliberately, to front the essential facts of life, to learn what life has to teach, and not discover when we die that we have not lived at all. However we choose to live our life, may we not one day discover that we have spent our time foolishly and not lived at all. Rather, may we hear the message of Henry David Thoreau and live life honestly, deeply, truly, deliberately. So may it be. As we depart, may our senses be awakened to the world about us. May we learn to study nature and know ourselves. May we hold to that which is important and endures. May we learn to live. Go now in peace.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.fuchurch.org. austinuu.org.